Before starting the lecture, maybe these 2-3 minutes, I can take up both those feedbacks. I mean, some were really nice. Most common were the questions. The most common questions were related to the delayed choice, which I hope is much better now after the tutorial. And I did send you the reads. I'll just give you a quick, say, hint. When you are reading that, it's going to help that what the paradox was that when we were drawing the interference pattern from the two other slits, which were giving us interference and antifringes, remember? So this part of the spectra was not the complete reading which we were taking. It was just pulling out partial information. So the reading on our detectors was, so this is the picture which I drew yesterday during the tutorial. So if this is the Gaussian data you get experimentally, what these two pictures here mean that you are selectively choosing half of the data from this and the rest half, and then calling this as fringes and antifringes. So that was the catch. These two pictures joined together would actually give you the actual data, the pattern you should see on the D0, which is the Gaussian, which is expected, yeah.
Can I just ask something? How is this different to the quantum erasure experiment? So we claim that the quantum, the first one.
Oh, okay. It's not different. That's the point. It's not different. Yeah. So this is not working as a quantum eraser. We are not. There's no.
So the claim is that this basically takes a Gaussian curve, and it takes up one beam, splits it into that one, takes an interference pattern, an anti-interference pattern there. So if you put them together, you'd get a Gaussian as well.
So there's no quantum eraser. Yeah. It's
but,
still
but
which
in the
way?
Original, in the original quantum eraser, can you also make the same claim?
Is that the quantum eraser, which I specifically talked about, the experiment which we were discussing in the tutorial, is the one which I'm talking about. I'm not sure about the other experiments, how they work, and if they actually erase, which I think there should. There's a debate in literature. Like the experimentalists who have performed these experiments, they claim that it works as a quantum eraser. But there are counter arguments that this is not working as a quantum eraser. And this, the particular example, the particular paper which we did was one of the demonstrations. And I think the other experiments should also have similar explanations somewhere. But it's a debatable topic. Because experimentalists, the groups who have performed these experiments, they have their own explanations, which say that this is working as a quantum eraser.
Is there anything like fundamental that would to prevent like the existence of quantum
causality?
Causality, okay.
That's
so
if
a quantum eraser truly exists, then causality would
yes,
be
yes, exactly.
All right, that's okay.
So I hope you can go through the literature if you have more further discussions on the PDFs which I sent. I'm more than happy to discuss with them, okay? But let's move ahead. And the other specific request was that I should be using Blackboard more, and good news is yes, I will be using Blackboard. But the presentation is going to be here because I have beautiful animations and pictures which I want to show during my lecture, and I don't want to scroll this up and down regularly. That's a lot of waste of time. So we are going to use Blackboard for mathematical derivations of whatever we are talking about in terms of physics here. So physics here, maths there. And for maths, I'm going to skip the trivial steps, just give you the idea. All the steps are given in my notes, which are on the portal. So unless you want to, you don't have to take notes in class. Just let's talk about physics here. Okay, everything would be there. All the mathematical details and everything is on in my notes. Okay, there was one very good suggestion about working in groups, like kind of an interaction. I ask you a question, then you discuss in groups, and then give me the answer. Depending on the time, I think we can do that. But a lot of group work is already being done in tutorials. So we'll try to keep that short. I don't want to waste a lot of time in all those group work, but let's say we can do it for some shorter problems, okay? Yes, for the feedback forms, when I'm asking about the takeaways from lectures, it doesn't mean you have to summarize the lecture. It's something which you learned something new, which you didn't know earlier, and it wasn't. If there was nothing, you can just leave that question. There's no need to fill in with the summary of the lecture, okay? Something which you learned something new in the lecture is what I'm asking for. Sending papers and reading before lecture, yes, I'll try my best to do that. I have already put lecture 2 last night before the lecture. I don't know how many of you got the time to see through that. It has some typos, which I'll correct after the lecture, okay? More math. I cannot share the slides, but I do have the notes which I can share, because one of the suggestion was to share the slides as well. But I'll be happy to share the GeoGebra links, whatever I have with me. There were a few specific questions, which if we have time after the lecture, or probably not today because you have bank appointments, if you don't mind, if you can email me your questions and I can reply back, and if it needs more than a written reply, I can always talk to you. I'm always available for questions. But most of the questions were either related to the delayed choice, which I think should be clear now, and the interpretations. And I'll be very frank here. These interpretations, the realistic and all, is a field which I have been exposed to when I was in PI, which is really interesting. So if you ask questions related to that, it would be both way learning process. So it's not like I'll be able to answer if there's any other orthodox, like if there's a realistic approach which satisfies the Bell theorem or something like that. I won't be able to right away answer that, but it would be a learning process. So I'll be really happy to work with you all in finding answers to those questions. Okay, so today's lecture is going to take more time. I think we can start, unless there's something which I missed and you want to discuss now. Something related to last lecture, if you want to discuss. All right, so a quick recap. Yesterday, we built the quantum foundation using double slit experiment, talked about wave function, superposition, measurement problem. And also we saw very interesting quantum experiments which talk about these bizarre effect in quantum realm. And then we tried to see that not everything which looks bizarre is actually quantum, right, in the tutorials. So a lot of stuff, a lot of foundational stuff, which didn't include any mathematical rigor. But let's start with a bit of maths today. And what we are going to do today is we are going to address another important question, which is a fundamental question, that what is time and how do you define the unidirectional flow of time? Like, how do you assign an arrow to time? Why does it flow in one direction? Okay, so the quote for today is by Stephen Hawking: arrow of time, something that distinguishes the past from the future, giving a direction to the time. So if there's a change in our lectures, what we are going to say, if there's something which is changing, we'll say time has appeared. And if that change is asymmetrical, we'll say that there's a direction of time, okay? And what I mean by asymmetrical time is that if you run the video backwards, you will be able to tell that the movie is running backwards. Like, for example, if I have a ball and I toss it, or maybe this could be the second example. Maybe I have a ball and I throw it, catch it. Now I play it backwards, you won't be able to tell that what was in past and what was in future, right? Kind of. So this is a symmetric time concept, I would say, that you run it backwards and you cannot distinguish what is in past and what is in future. But if I have a ball, I throw it, it bounces. It bounces a couple of times and ultimately dies out the amplitude. And you now run this video backwards. Now you would be able to get a direction or the arrow of time, like which direction it would be moving in, right? Different fields, like when we talk about thermodynamics, it has a concept which gives direction to the time, right? And how do you define, usually, okay, just forget about different concepts in different theories, but how do you say that time is moving forward? What parameter do you usually use?
Entropy.
Entropy, yeah. In thermodynamics, you usually talk about entropy. Like if I have coffee and I mix milk in that, the molecules are going to mix, and that mixture is some kind of disorder. Now, if I just run this movie backwards, there's no way that the coffee molecules and the milk molecules are going to separate out, right? So this is the direction or the sense, this is the increase in entropy, which is aligned with the arrow in time in thermodynamics usually. And also when we define the time in universe, this is like the entropy is increasing throughout the universe, something like that. There's another way to define the arrow of time is causality, which we did yesterday, that the effect should always happen after cause, right? For example, let's say if I have a chalk here or a glass or something and I drop it and it breaks. So the cause was dropping and the effect is breaking. And if you play it backwards, you'll never see the chalk combining and then reaching my hand, right? So you know the effect, which is breaking of chalk, has happened after the cause. So there are a number of ways in which we can define the arrow of time. In quantum mechanics, the fundamental equation which we use is the Schrodinger equation. And it doesn't inherently specify a direction of time, Schrodinger equation, because if you see Schrodinger equation, it is compatible both ways, forward and backward. So how do you give a direction or arrow to time in quantum mechanics? That's the question which we are going to address. And before we talk about the time, we'll talk about how the systems or quantum systems, they propagate in time. That's the first question we should be answering in order to define time, okay? And before we do that, it's important to note that time is, in quantum mechanics, is a parameter. It's not an operator. So you cannot define time by defining an operator of time and then saying, okay, time operates on a state and you get an eigenvalue corresponding to, oh, so this is the time. You can't do that in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, you don't have a time operator. And this is one of the questions in your homework, which you are going to find that why cannot we have an operator corresponding to time in quantum mechanics? Okay, we run into a number of problems if we try to define operator corresponding to time. So time is a parameter, not an operator in quantum mechanics. So we have to deal it another way. What we are going to say is it's a parameter, and what we'll try to address is, let's say I have a quantum system, and yes, yesterday we said that all quantum systems, they are described as quantum, as wave. So I have a quantum system at some time t naught, and I want to see how it evolves in time at time t. And right now, I'm not giving any direction to time, okay? It's just a parameter which does some change to my system, all right? And I'm not claiming that t is more than t naught and so on. I don't know, but both the times are different. So in order to see my temporal progression or how it's evolving in time, let's define a time operator, okay? So u would be my time operator. Not time operator, time propagator. And this propagator here means that u must evolve my state from time t naught to time t, okay? So this is basically what it's doing. We need to define this now. This is something which is going to show us how the quantum systems, they evolve in time, okay? What kind of properties do you expect this to have? Like, what kind of form it should have? Yeah.
It should be unitary.
It should be unitary. Why? Yes, perfect. Why do you think it's unitary?
T naught
T, oh yeah, that's the second, yep.
It should be unitary to preserve the norm.
Exactly, so it should be unitary to preserve the norm.
Yeah, but the unitary is not necessary, anti-unitary works as well.
Unitary works as well.
Anti-unitary works as well.
Yes.
So like, yeah.
Yeah, but anti-unitary should also preserve the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but for convenience, we take it as unitary. We need, I guess, yes. Okay, and Santanu just said that this should be identity, which makes sense, because if the system is not evolving, nothing is happening to system. So this should be identity. What else?
I think one should be able to like glue the propagators. So if I like propagate with some, you know, intermediate time, I should be able to like get it.
So something called commutativity or composition, which means I propagate it from T0 to T should be equivalent to propagating from T0 to T1, T0 to T. So intermediate steps should be allowed, should be continuous propagation. And the operators, they are always acted on this side, okay, all right. What else?
I mean, for the third step, can we say it is like conjugally ordered?
What ordered?
I mean, can we say that it is chronologically ordered?
Canonically ordered, I am not sure about that. Like, what are canonically ordered operators?
Because as you said, we can like be moving like from T0 to T2.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to like pass by through an intermediate state as T1. So usually when it's like that, we talk about chronological order.
Oh, okay. Then if I'm not sure how you define canonical orders, but if that's the definition, then yes, definitely it's a canonical.
Chronological.
Chronological. Yes. Yes. It's in chronological order. Yeah, perfect.
I think this one should be inverse, right?
Should be inverse?
Yeah, no.
Okay, yeah. Time reversal of U?
Yeah, I see.
Or maybe inverse, not time, but let's say inverse of U. Which I think we can find from here, right?
Yeah.
Because it says that it should be equal to taking system from right. So if I just propagate from here to here and then come back, that's why it doesn't have a direction. Which means that and unitary. Maybe I should also write the mathematical expression for unitary. Also, it should depend on time, but not time, the difference between the time, because it won't make sense if it just depends on the time, right? It should always be more talking about the differences in time. That's more important. So,
does it have to be linear as well?
It has to be linear as well because of the preservation, right? It has to be linear, I think. One reason, yes, and quantum mechanics is linear. Yeah, so we have, and you have been amazing in describing all the four important properties. And what else we need is to define U, and we know that what U does is propagate my wave function in time. In your Schrodinger equation, what propagates the state in time? Hamiltonian. So U and H should be related to each other. And the Hamiltonian, by definition, is a time derivative, and I'm also always bad with this stuff. Is that right? Is there a negative sign or positive?
Okay, yeah.
And what Hamiltonian is saying is that Hamiltonian is nothing but time derivative of psi. Like, the action of Hamiltonian on a wave function is just time derivative of psi. So if I say that at time t, I'm using a shortcut here, and if I just take the derivative, I'm skipping a few trivial steps here, what I'll end in the end would get is something like this. I would get that the relation between my Hamiltonian is this. Okay. Exercise for everyone here. Can you prove that this is Hermitian? It has to be because this is Hamiltonian, right? Can you prove that this is Hermitian? Because if it's Hermitian, then we are in right direction, right? We are going in the right direction. Can you all check if this is Hermitian? And the starting point should be the definition of unitary, the evolution operators. So probably this should be your starting point.
This side is 0, and this side is u dagger dot plus u dot u dagger, and we see that there's a negative sign here. And
but it has an iota, so if we just add an I, I think it should become Hermitian. Yeah, perfect. Okay, so it's very much easy to see that this is actually Hermitian because this quantity here is anti-Hermitian, and if I add I, it would make it a Hermitian quantity, okay? So to summarize, the relation between our unitary operator, which is a time evolution operator U, and Hamiltonian is given by this differential equation, which looks much, much similar to Schrodinger equation, right? There's no kind of difference. But what is going to be our aim now is to solve this differential equation to find the unitary operator, okay? Any ideas how we should start by solving? Let me write the equation on the board and suggest how do you solve a first order differential equation. How do you solve a first order differential equation?
This has an exponential solution.
Yes, and how did you come into that? Like, how do you say why?
Separation of variables.
Yeah, that's the first thought. But remember, this is operator. So, would that work? We have to be careful. Okay, let's take what Marco said, right? Let's take that approach. If I do variable separable, you should be of this form. Right? Let's expand this exponential. This is an exponential series, okay? Any objections till here? There should be one.
Yeah, we should be careful whether H is dependent.
Yes, because they are operators and they are time dependent. I don't know which one is before which one, right? I'm not sure if they commute. So probably this is the correct answer, I would say. And there's a 2 factorial. Yeah. But this is not the right approach because I don't know how to order my Hamiltonian here.
How do you get from the exponential? Do you just expand it?
This exponential is a series. Exponential series 1 minus, yeah. 1 plus x plus 1 by 2 factorial x square and so on. Is there some? I think it's correct, yeah?
Yeah, that's
okay. Okay. So, yeah, the problem is these operators are not time order, and I don't know if a Hamiltonian at time t1 is commuting with h2 or not. Okay, so we'll use a different approach, and I'll be short of boards. All right, so what we are going to do instead is what else we can do instead of using a variable separable, which is more appropriate with operators? There's not just one way to solve the differential equations, right? This is a first order differential equation. I can just integrate it, right? Okay, so let's integrate it. Perfect, but still, there's a problem. The problem is that solution for you demands you. Okay, yeah? This should not give me the satisfactory result. So let's back substitute u in here once more. I'll get a series. Which will look much, much, much similar to this. And then I can keep substituting u, and I can get a series for u, right? Which looks reasonable because now time here is order. Why? Because t1 is always greater than t2. t2 is one of the variables for this integration variable, right? What we can do is, this is a perfectly good result, which is called Dyson series, by the way. But what is not likable about this series is that this n-fold integration, so this is like so on, this n-fold integration, they're coupled. The integration limits for this is one of the variables for the other integration, right? So let's try to decouple these n-fold integrations. It would be a much simpler and a beautifuler formal, which will be more useful, I would say, because right now it's not so convenient. Okay, so what is our next step? We are going to change or modify our n-fold coupled integrals into uncoupled integrals, okay? And by coupled and uncoupled, I just mean that I just want to have some common integration limits like 0 to t, t naught to t, t naught to t, and so on, okay? All right. Let's use that part of the board. And in order to do that, what I'm going to do is, we are going to introduce something called the time ordered operator, okay? Time ordering operator. What this time ordering operator does is, when it acts on a bunch of operators, time dependent, it orders them according to their increasing times, okay, and so on. So what I mean here is, let's say if I had just two integrations, so time order operator would have been this for t1 greater than t2. So if t1 was preceding t2, then ht1 ht2 so whichever time is greater, it appears on the right left hand side, okay? So the smaller times are appear like they are acting on the wave function before the larger times. Is that fine? Okay, so we are going to try to uncouple those integrations. Let's do it for n is equal to 2 case. That's the simplest one, much easier to do, but that's going to give you a picture how we can uncouple them, all right? So for n is equal to 2, my integration looks like this. And can I, for simplification, say that t0 is equal to 0? It makes the origin at 0, which is like visually more pleasing. But you can always take t0 as any time, OK? So if I choose t0 as my 0, my two-fold integration would look like this. T0 to T1, and I know T1 is greater than T2 here, from there, okay? Let's look at the integration limits here and see what part of the, like what area the integration it covers. So if you look at this integration, and I'll draw the integration limits on an axis. So this is my T1, this is my T2, and this is a 45 degree line, which is T1 is equal to T2. And this is my maximum T0, T, okay? So what this integration is limits they look like here is T1, it runs from 0 to T, right? So T1, it runs from 0 to T. This is the integration which I'm covering here. T2, it runs from 0 to T1. So T2, So T1 is this axis. So I'm talking about this. T1 runs from 0 to T, 0 to T, 0 to T, 0 to T, right? T2 from 0 to T1. So T2 is from 0 to T1, 0 to T1, 0 to T1, 0 to T1, right? So this integration is giving me values, whatever values I sum up here and get it, right? Now let's look at this integration. I'll just tweak these integration limits a little bit. And since T1 is greater than T2, can I just remove this and write a time operator here? It's same, right? Time operator just says that T1 is greater than T2. So this is my integration, which would be covered by this area here, all right? Now this integration here is equivalent to these limits, integration over these limits. Why? These integration limits says that T2 runs from 0 to T. So T2 runs from 0 to T. And T1 runs from T2 to T, which means this is my T1 is equal to T2. So T1 runs from T2 to T. Right? So basically, both the integrations are same. They're giving me the same. They're equivalent, I would say. Do you all agree with this? Okay. In here, can I change the integration variables? Can I replace T1 by T2 and T2 by T1? Okay. So basically, I'm talking about this part now, if you see. And can I now also introduce a time operator, time ordering operator, and write this as T? Remove this. And since it's a time operator, can I do that? See, remember, if T2 was greater than T1, my time operator would give me HT2, HT1, which is this quantity here. Okay? All right. Now let's add up these two integrations.
So yeah. You said if T2 is bigger than T1, it would be HT2, HT1, but that was HT1, HT2.
This was HT2, HT1. We changed the integration variable, so now T1, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Now, this is what? This is time order HT1, HT2. I can just replace it, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now let's add up both these integrations. And if I add up both these integration, I would get 2 times of this, because they are same, right? 2 times of the original integration I2. And if I add them up, I would say this is equivalent to 0 to t t1, 0 to t dt2, time ordered Hamiltonians here. This is perfect, right? So my integration, the coupled integration I2 from there is half of this quantity, and these integration limits are now uncoupled. And now I don't have to worry about the order. What this integration means that the Hamiltonian with time, which is appearing which is shorter, should always act on the wave function first, which makes chronologically it makes sense. All right. And if I repeat it for 3, 4, and 5 fold of integrations, I'll get a factorial here. For 3, I'll get a 6 instead of 2, and so on. And if you add them up, you'll get something called a time ordered Dyson series. Okay, so that was a Dyson series. Hamiltonian were time ordered, but the integrations were uncoupled, were coupled. This is again a Dyson series where the integration limits are uncoupled. The usefulness of this equation is that now from this equation, I can find out I would be able to find more cases where Hamiltonian depends on time, where Hamiltonian depends on time and commutes and so on. So this is a more general expression, I would say. So if in case, let's say these Hamiltonians, they don't depend on time, you'll just get the usual expression which you have been seeing all along. So this is a more general form, and you can derive case 1 and case 2 from here, which you couldn't have done with that. Yeah.
So when you say we don't have to worry about the order there, you mean you don't have to worry about in which order you write them because the time ordering operators.
But when you are doing it, you have to worry which operator comes here.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But in here, the expression in there, there we didn't know which one was T1 was before T2 or T2 was after something like that. Here we know which is preceding which one. So that was a problematic solution, I would say. They do look exactly same. The only difference is here we didn't know which T is preceding, okay? So we have, our time ordering, this time evolution operator defined, but what this time propagator gives us is it tells how the states they are propagating, right? Which is not so useful experimentally, because whenever you observe something, it's not the wave function or the state of the system you're observing. You always observe some kind of observables like momentum, energy, etc. So let's see how the observables, they look like as a function of time, all right? By the way, I didn't share the Slido for today. I'm sorry. Just skip my mind. If you have any anonymous questions, you can just scan it and ask. Do you want to do that? But I think you're already comfortable in asking. But if there's someone who's not comfortable asking, they can just scan it and ask the questions there. Okay. So, Are you okay if I write on this part of the board? I just want to save time of getting things erased. All right, so what we talk about is we always observe is the observables, which are given as the time expectation values. Or maybe I'll just skip writing them. So in here, if you substitute psi s in terms of your time evolution operator, you'll see that there are two ways to interpret or calculate this observable, right? One way would be to include our time propagation in the wave function in here, the orange one. So the time operator, time propagation is included in your state. And the other is the time propagation is included in your operators. So there are two approaches which give you equivalent results. You get the same observable effect from both. And one is called the Schrödinger approach, and the other is called the Heisenberg approach. I'm sure you're familiar with this as well. So just quickly, because I want to come to the point where we are going to see time and give a direction to time. Schrödinger approach is the same approach which we just discussed. It's like more or less similar. If you just apply a psi to your time derivative of u, you'll get a Schrödinger equation, which you solve and find your wave functions, right? This is a time evolution in your Schrödinger picture. Okay. Now, when you solve Schrödinger picture, you usually find out these eigenstates or eigenfunctions for the picture. Like, for example, this is the potential well problem, where you get these eigenstates and eigenvalues for this particular problem. Let's see how the eigenstates, they evolve in time. So we know from previous slide that time evolution of states in Schrödinger picture is given by this. And if my psi is in terms of basis, the eigenbasis or the eigenstates, how do eigenstates they evolve? So if my psi t I don't know which I have used n, and maybe I can write cn. Yeah. Okay. Let's see how they evolve in time. And obvious that the evolution operator should remain same. And if I'm taking my Hamiltonian as time independent, this is my evolution operator we just saw. This is how my n should evolve in time, right? Because n because of this fact, I can write it like this, right? Now, if I see how the probabilities of n, they are evolving in time, the probability distribution, I would see that at any time t, the probabilistic distribution for these basis set, it's not changing with time, right? And such states are called as the stationary states. So if I had in my universe, let's say my universe is a big atomic system, and that atomic system has only this state, like the basis is just this state. It's a degenerate system. All the states are just n. N is just one quantity. And I try to see the evolution of my universe, I would see that it's not actually evolving, it's stationary. I won't see it moving. Do you agree? Right? Because my basis set, they are not evolving with time. Like the probability is not evolving with time. They just have these phases, which has no observational effect. So there's no notion of time right now, if I just talk about these stationary states. However, if I talk about the wave packets, where these wave packets in here are superposition of my eigenstates, and these eigenstates are not degenerate, so they are all different. If I see time evolution of this wave packet, I would see that I'll at least get a notion of time. I would be able to see the change. That's how we are defining time, right? So let's do one specific example and then see that if we are able, because of this vector, this time evolution, are we able to see any change in my system so that I can get a sense of time, all right? So this particular example is for a Gaussian wave packet, and that's how we define the time evolution for a wave packet. And each of these E, they are introducing a different phase for each of the bases here, okay? It's a separate, so it should play a role. Each basis is evolving, it's having a phase of its own over a period of time, and it should look much different than the single basis evolving. And since it's a Gaussian, I'll choose the initial wave packet as a Gaussian, and it's centered about B, okay? Let me show you how the picture looks like. So you see each of the phase being, which is being different for each of the bases, it's playing its role, somehow adding up, and adding up in such a way that the wave function, the probabilities are looking different over a period of time. So I do see some change, and I can see, oh, time has appeared. Something is changing, so time has appeared. But if you keep observing it for a considerable amount of time, get the wave packet here back. And after exactly the same amount of time, you see that your wave packet is going to recircuit here. Like it's going to revive back here. Just observe it for like a minute as well. And we are close. Da, 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 da. Did you see? Did you notice something about the video? Except for that, yeah, we got the Gaussian back from where we started. Was there anything else you observed?
There was a point where there was two Gaussians.
Yes, as well. And anything else? Something which might be able to give us a direction for the time. So time has appeared, for sure. My system is evolving with time. I see the change. But do you see any direction in time here? Because the video was symmetric. If I play it backwards, you'll notice no difference. So we have time, but we don't have the notion of direction yet. Any ideas what we are missing here? A system, an atomic system. Oh, maybe the ball example. Tossing, catching, tossing.
What part we're missing? Dissipation, right?
We are missing the?
Dissipation.
Yes.
But then if we take a bigger system to have no dissipation,
okay,
still recover, like it will still be symmetric if we wait long enough.
If?
We can like always increase the size of the system.
With the revival times?
I
won't comment on that because I'm not sure. That might be true. I can check, okay? That does this revival time has any effect on the, like, is it affected by the size of the system or not? By the size, what do you mean?
I mean that if you have dissipation, it's like interaction with the environment. Like when I drop this, there's sound, there's like vibrations in the table. But then if I include all of them in my system, I will see revival.
Yeah, yes, 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 yes. So if you include the environment where it's dissipating in,
yes,
then obviously you consider a system where there's no dissipation, so it'll revive. Yeah, yes, you're right. So what we didn't consider here was the interaction with the environment. We were just considering that the universe is a single atom and it has nothing to do with the environment, if there's an environment outside the universe anyways. Okay, but like, for example, an atomic system. Have you ever thought why? We always say that these are stationary states, right? The eigenstates of a system. So an atomic system, these orbitals, they are the eigenstates. This is what you get for hydrogen atom. But this is not a stationary state. In fact, it has a finite lifetime. If it was really stationary, it should have an infinite lifetime, because our theory says that stationary states, the probability of them evolving is like constant. Is that right? But it has a finite lifetime. And that's the reason, because it's interacting with the photon field around it. And that's how the spontaneous emission takes place. Okay. I would have liked to go how this dissipation actually comes into picture, etc. But it requires system, like some knowledge of composite system, which we haven't covered yet. We are going to cover composite system when we talk about density matrices. And let's see if we can talk about these there, okay? But the idea is that the system is interacting with the environment. It's kind of losing its energy. It's not only dissipating, it's also decohering with the system. Both are different. And that's how the system dissipates and we get a direction to our system. So this is a system where we have a direction of time. So if you observe, there are two peaks instead of one. The first one is the previous one without any dissipation. And the lower one, where the energy is reducing, like the probabilities are reducing, is the one where we know, yes, the system is dissipating. The amplitude is decreasing. And the direction of flow should be, time should be forward in this case. Okay.
So practically, you could measure like the overall energy of the system and see if it decreases.
Overall is not, because energy should be converted. It's giving it to the environment. So what you have to tell me your name.
Jonathan.
Yeah. So what just Jonathan said, that if we consider a bigger system, the atom and the environment, then it's obviously the revivals are going to come back, because then the energy is not dissipating overall. Okay, yeah, it's almost like finished. You can't even see the amplitude.
So where's the amplitude dissipating into?
Environment.
So what this is showing, like, is that you'd expect to have no quantum system after a long time.
Your quantum system is not in this state. For example, if I take an atomic system, it has decayed. So there's no probability I'll find the system in 2s.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. There is a probability the system is somewhere, but the probability has, in this case, it has decayed to the ground state. It doesn't mean that the atom has disappeared or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so. For the sake of completeness, and are you all interested in seeing the revival time? I can quickly show you at what time we still have time. The classes are till 12:15. Let's keep it for the end, but it's in my notes if you want to see, okay? If in the end, if we have time, I'll briefly tell you that at exactly what time you expect the revivals to happen, okay? So let's complete the Heisenberg picture, because this is the picture which we are going to see in tutorials. The Schrodinger picture is one something which has been covered a number of times. So let's talk about the Heisenberg picture. And as we said, that what we are more concerned about when we talk about time dynamics of any quantum system is the operators and not the wave function. In Heisenberg picture, we see the evolution of these observables, which are given in terms of their corresponding operators. And this is the Heisenberg equation of motion. I am sure you're familiar with how this equation is derived. I'll just skip steps and give few important steps how you actually come up with this equation. Okay. Yeah. So, if you remember from our previous slides, our observable or operator in terms of Heisenberg picture evolves like this. Okay, this is the operator in Schrodinger picture. Okay, now what I want to see is how these operators they evolve. This is what the Heisenberg picture says, that the operators they evolve in time. So I'm just seeing how they change with time. And just with a few intermediate steps, simple one, like differentiating them, there'll be three terms with derivative of u, derivative of u dagger, derivative of a. And then if I just assume there's no explicit time dependence of a and get rid of that, there's no need. You can always keep it. And use the fact that my u is hu, I think, yeah. So this is what we got for our unitary operator. Just substitute it in here. What you'll get in the end is that result here, okay? That's the time evolution of any operator. And both these approaches are equivalent, which is very interesting. What I want to emphasize on, maybe not showing here, let's first emphasize, this is something which you are familiar with, which some of you might not be familiar with, is that in Heisenberg picture, the basis, it evolves in opposite direction as compared to Schrodinger, all right? So what I mean is, let's say that equation, particular equation there, that I have my basis or eigenstates A defined like this for any operator A. In Schrodinger picture, since A is not evolving in time, I don't expect the eigenstates or eigenvalues to evolve in time as well, okay? So in Schrodinger picture, the wave function, it evolves in time, but the basis, it remains stationary, okay? This is important. But now if I use A from here, which would be AH, that equation, so for the same eigenvalue, the corresponding observable in my Heisenberg picture, the eigenstates or eigenbasis, it evolves in the opposite direction. All right? And I'm going to show you a picture here, which is really interesting. And this is a problem we are going to do in our tutorial, okay? So we'll see sprint precession on Bloch sphere. And if you're not familiar with the Bloch sphere representation, you just need the basics. Where are the z, x, y's? That's all, nothing more. But if you try to see spin precision on a Bloch sphere, it doesn't work so well. You see the pointer? Very light, okay. You see the system is evolving with time, so the state is evolving. It's kind of exponential, like a phase, e to the power I, ht, something like that. So the phase, the state is evolving in time. However, if you do the same spin precession on using Heisenberg picture, the state would remain stationary, but you'll see the sphere now rotating with opposite direction. Okay, and we'll get through the numericals and the mathematical rigor in the tutorials. And this will be something interesting to see. Okay. We have time for questions now, and I think I would like to go through the. We still have time because through this time revival derivation. So any questions? I'll give you a pause here before we move. Anything you want to discuss or ask? Yeah.
I didn't really get how to justify the error of time in the Heisenberg because in the Schrodinger picture, we have the state evolving with time, and from the state, we can get the probability, and then we can talk about, you know, the interaction with the environment and, you know, how we can define the error of time. But with the Heisenberg picture, we only have the operator evolving with time.
But operators, they have a corresponding observable.
Yeah.
And if the system is dissipating, the observable should have a effect.
The expectation value.
Yes. So it's not that the pictures I showed were just the probability distributions. You could do the exactly same thing with any operator. And what's interesting, since you mentioned Heisenberg picture, like how we'll do, question, which is part of tutorial again. How would you explain the double slit experiment in Heisenberg picture? You need an operator for Heisenberg picture. Can you discuss or describe the interference pattern you get for a double slit using Heisenberg picture? Do you have any corresponding operator for that? You don't have to answer now, but this is one of the questions in our tutorial. Like, these are the two questions we are going to cover in our tutorial Tuesday. Okay. More questions. So you can think of more questions. In the meantime, I'll get my board ready for the revival times. All good? Okay. So let's see how we can mathematically give an expression where we expect time to evolve for a system, like revival times. Okay. So remember the Gaussian wave packet we saw in experiments? Usually they are localized over, over some n numbers, n naught, let's say. So in the energy spectrum, experimentally, when they try to produce the wave packets, these wave packets are centered about some energy n, all right? Any state corresponding to energy n. Is the terminology clear to you all? So instead of a Gaussian wave packet, I'm going to talk about a wave packet which is centered about some state n naught, and the energy corresponding to n naught is en naught, and it's peaked about this energy en naught. The system has the maximum contribution from this energy. All right? If I can do that, I should be able to Taylor series my energies about this value. So this is just Taylor series expansion about this
central value, peak value, okay? And these here mean the time, the derivatives of n, e energy, which are with respect to the n, okay? Now, if I substitute this in my time evolution for psi, in here, if you see, there are some vectors which have periodicity in them, right? These vectors, they define a kind of periodicity in your psi, right? This is just the time evolution which we saw, e to the power minus iota h. So let's not think about this much. But if you look at these and so on, you would be able to define a kind of an oscillatory behavior of psi. And the first vector, the first time from this expression would be as the classical period. Second would be the quantum revival time period, and so on. If I take more, the further one occur fractional revival time period, super revival time periods, and so on. Okay, so there's just not one revival time period; there are a number of one, depending on how many terms you are able to take. Yeah.
Can you explain again what a revival period is?
What?
What a revival period is?
Yes, yes. We are coming to that. Exactly. Oh. We are coming to that. Is there any more question? Okay, so let's have more discussion on what classical revival, super revivals they mean. Before that, can you tell me, will mathematically, we still don't know what this revival is here exactly, but can you tell me if a harmonic oscillator will have this revival time period? Will it have?
The energy of the harmonic oscillator is linear. So I don't see like what is the thing in the denominator. Is it like the first derivative? It's the second derivative.
It's the second derivative, yes.
So the second derivative is zero.
Yes. So the revival time should be infinite. So there are no revivals in oscillators. The example which we saw for revival was an example for the infinite potential well, remember? And in there, so depending on what kind of eigen energies you have for the system, you would expect it to have a revival or a super revival, etc. But so if I have a harmonic oscillator, it'll just have a classical period. It'll like just oscillate. This is what I'll see over a period of time. Okay. There will be no revival time periods.
I'm just wondering why we're separating these two times in this way. Why can't we just, because I feel like we should take the entire like Taylor series to have a right period for the revival, because the only thing we're getting is an approximation, right?
Why do you call it an approximation? But yeah, I agree. Do you mean that something common and then, can you elaborate what you exactly mean? Maybe something which also came into my mind.
We're truncating the Taylor series at some point because we're defining our period using only like first and second derivatives. But I feel like if we didn't Taylor expand and try to solve for a time potentially very big at which the system would come back,
The reason why we are doing it this, because these times, they don't appear for all systems. For example, for oscillators, you won't have any second derivatives. And that's why we are truncating it at a point. Like, for example, for an harmonic oscillator, if I add an harmonicity to the system, which varies as n cube, then it will have a, I'll have to include the next term as well. But beyond the third, like the fourth term, there's no point including other terms. So there's no approximation here.
I think Pierre's question refers to the fact that there is no H, like H is not increasing, for example, the level, like to decrease the importance. So basically, why first one is more important than the others?
Oh. So this is more important than the other? Is that?
Yeah, in the contribution.
Now this, so revival time is always larger than the classical time period.
Yeah, and why is that?
Physically or mathematically? I can show you mathematically easily, yes.
Okay.
Physically, I can make you visualize. I don't think I can give you a visual picture why, but let's, it's a good exercise. So for the previous example, where our En was, for the infinite potential well, what was the eigen energies? N squared? Yeah. Okay, can you calculate the classical period and revival period? You'll see that the classical period is always less than or equal to the revival times, always. So it's like you have a, it might be a very bad example, but just to picturize it, you have a quantum oscillator.
Yeah, but for example, in hydrogen atom, like energy is inverse of n, right? So it would be vice versa.
In hydrogen atom, in atomic systems, the revivals would be 1 over n, yes. And can you see if that's true? N cube, N naught, 1, 2, 3, yeah?
No, maybe it's not even a counter example.
For hydrogen atom, there should be, like, I can't think of revivals in an atomic system within the energy levels. So it's more like a Coulombic potential, which you're talking about, like some kind of energy that way. And what kind of revivals are we trying to visualize in atomic hydrogen?
No, I just thought like to come up with...
Oh, with the energies. But makes sense, yeah. And that's
maybe
a good...
It's not even a counterexample, like, because you had like polynomial iteration.
Yeah. It might not be a very good example, but we need to think why not a good example, right? So I'm just trying to think of a reason.
How do we define what is physically classical period and revival period?
Revival periods and classical periods are the point, okay, the classical periods are the periods which you will expect if your system was a classical system. Like let's say, hypothetically, you have a quantum pendulum. So classical period would mean this, going, coming. Okay, and a revival time period would mean when the system, in terms of wave function, it recircuits, and that revival time period will take after a number of classical time periods. So number of classical back and forth moving. So in this particular example of an infinite well, it would mean the particle is somewhere hitting back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's the classical time period for it. And the quantum revival is just what we see, that this particle has a wave function, and the wave function when it's appearing back in the original position.
Okay, so it's not only like position, but the wave function as well.
It's not, yes. Because this is only for quantum systems.
Yeah, makes sense.
This won't be for any classical. For any classical system, you won't see any revival time. Yeah.
So how do we derive the revival period? Like, how do I see that it's exact?
it's exact. So if for our particular case, the time period which we saw, the revival time period, obviously I had elongated it, it's not that long. But you can just find a numerical value corresponding to this, right? Is that what you're asking?
So like this holds for any quantum system? Like I can do this expansion for any quantum system and it holds, or is it particular to this well?
No, for any, I still need to think for the hydrogenic atomic system, how the revivals should look like. But for any quantum system, and these revival time periods won't appear for systems like harmonic oscillator, because in there, the energy dependence is just first order. But if I add some kind of enharmonicity to the system, then you'll see revivals for the system. Okay?
Can I see how the formula is like derived? For some reason, I can't see like how is this the correct period, maybe.
What this is that all just approximately, like for the revival.
This is exact result. These revival periods you are asking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. These are like the part of the... Are you trying to see the entire psi revive? Is that your question?
I think we are asking about derivation. And by the way,
It's
not a counterexample because classical period is still less, but I think we are asking about derivation.
For these?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I can have more rigorous derivation, because I thought it was self-explanatory from here that these vectors here are the inverse of time, which is in here. Right? How do you define time period? It's inverse of frequencies. And these here, they kind of represent frequency.
What makes it the revival time? Like, why isn't it the third, Taylor expansion? It seems pretty arbitrary.
Okay, yep.
I feel like you've got different frequencies for each term in your expansion, and the revival is when all of these all the periods of these different terms all align together at the same time, and these results feel like they're
approximately infinitely many of periods, right? So there may not be
So I feel like if you have infinitely many terms, this would be an approximate approximate revival time.
Yeah.
And if you have finitely many terms, you can get an exact one.
Yeah, but depending on your E, you'll have to truncate it, and that is going to give the entire picture, is going to give you the entire revival of the state. Is that what you mean? Like cumulative contribution from all these terms added up together should give you the exact result.
Yes, that's the same.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. Doesn't make sense to you?
Step by step.
Ah, okay.
So you mean after all the revival period is approximate. So since you are only taking the first three terms of the series.
I'm just checking if I can give you something which helps more. But yeah, that's a good question. Maybe a more rigorous description of revival times in terms of mathematics or in terms of physics?
Both.
Both?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
I don't think I conceptually.
How about if I give you a...
Even just a little note that's sent out in an email, just explain it.
Done. Okay, I think that would be better. Me giving me random answers here right now would be a better thing, that I give you a one-page documentation with more rigorous mathematics, I don't know. If you exactly tell me what you're looking for?
I guess I just don't understand. I feel like if you put the revival period in lieu of t in the state there, I don't really understand how we get back the original
psi star.
What are we reviving to?
Okay, so maybe how this revives back after I put in here, something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
I think this should be doable. I can do that. So mathematically, yes, and physically, do you want to know more about the picture? What should be a classical time period and what should be a revival time period actually?
Yeah.
Okay. I doubt how I would be able to explain classical, but this should be doable.
Yeah.
For a quantum system, describing classical time periods might be very tricky. And I might be giving some vague examples, but that should make picture a little clear. Feynman rule. I don't know what's that. Fermat rule, right?
Fermi.
Oh.
I think that decay, right? On the excited state, that's the time.
Okay, I don't know. I won't comment on something I don't know, actually. Okay, but yeah, this is interesting. I can definitely do that. Anything else? There were some questions related to measurement as well in the feedback. And I'm not an expert on measurements. Something which I'm definitely sure you are going to cover in quantum foundations or quantum information measurements, yes. So, but related to the different approaches, I'm open to that because this is something even I'm interested in. So if you have any specific questions, I do have some specific questions here, but I don't know who asked, so I can't email the answers. So if you have, just email me and I'll try to get back. Maybe after 19th, but I'll definitely get back. This I should do in over the weekend and be able to send you an email. Okay? All right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.